Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, and you can find all of my contact information in the show notes. You need to reach out to me for any of your real estate needs. Just a reminder, if you enjoy this content, or even if you're unsure, please just hit the little subscribe button. You've got multiple different ways to do that, depending on what platform you're using. YouTube, I believe it's a little bell that you hit. Apple Podcasts, I think you actually hit the subscribe button. There might be a checkbox. I don't know. Every app has a different way of doing it. I just ask that you please do that because that helps to support the show. And if you need a realtor in the Greenville area, I'm your guy. My contact information is there in the show notes, as always. Today is June. All right, I'm recording this on June the 1st. It's crazy how quickly the time has gone by this year. And we are now outside of what we consider the peak of the peak season for real estate, right? It's not that we're outside of the general peak season, right? That lasts for the entire summer. But once we get to Memorial Day, there is a slowdown that tends to happen. And we're here. We're past Memorial Day. We're in June. And now we're at the time of the year when people start traveling and when summer plans start to take effect. And by this point, again, we're still not in our part of the year where things just grind to a halt. Nothing close to that. Don't hear me out that I'm saying that specifically. But it's not going to be, generally speaking, quite as crazy as April and May were. And that's just normal. Now, if that does happen, which it could, that would just buck seasonal trends. I don't see that happening unless, as we've talked in the past, mortgage rates come down. And so this is some of the stuff that that I think about as we enter all of these different seasons, because this all directly impacts me. But the other thing that I'm thinking about as we enter this month of June is that the South Carolina primaries are here. And I just want to say, the primaries are here and real estate is on the ballot. So we're going to talk about the South Carolina primaries. And for a lot of these, the primaries are more important than the general election, okay? Let's make no bones about it. South Carolina is a very red state, very Republican, and particularly in the Greenville area, very, very Republican. There are some little pockets of Greenville and Spartanburg and Anderson that do vote blue. But for the most part, generally speaking, this area, it's a very, very red area. You either love that or you hate it, right? That's the way politics are right now. But generally speaking, when it comes to real estate, with a few noteworthy exceptions, there isn't a whole lot of disagreement between red and blue. There isn't a whole lot of disagreement between Republicans and Democrats over a lot of the core things that affect real estate in our area. And so that's what we're going to be talking about here. I'm not going to be endorsing any candidates. I'm not going to be talking about specific candidates. You guys need to do your own research and figure out who it is that you want to vote for. But I have spoken to a lot of candidates. I've interviewed candidates. In fact, on this show, I interviewed Daniel Rumfelt for Greenville County Council earlier this year. I highly recommend that you go back and listen to that or watch that episode because that talks about, and I mean, almost that entire episode was about issues related to real estate and private property. And so that shows you just how much real estate and private property is on the ballot. I had an hour-long interview with a candidate for Greenville County Council, which, by the way, Daniel Rumfelt has never before been on county council, and yet he knows a lot of these issues. Very impressive candidate. Highly recommend that you go back and listen to that episode. But I want to discuss these issues, and then you can look at the different candidates and see where they stand and reach out to them. Listen, these candidates, they're accessible. They want to talk to people. They're door knocking. You think that they're not going to respond to a text message or a phone call when they're out there like doing something that's way harder, going around knocking on doors? Listen, reach out to them. Don't be afraid to do that. If you have a question, if you have a concern, take the time to reach out to them. They want to hear from you. Ralph Norman, Congressman Norman, who's running for governor this year, gave me his personal cell phone. Like, that's the level to which these people want to hear from their constituent base. So let's jump right in as far as the actual issues at play here. And first and foremost, and I guess you could debate whether this is specifically a real estate or a property issue, but I don't see how you can divorce it from the real estate related issues. And that is how to fund infrastructure. This is, if you've been in Greenville for any length of time, or in the upstate for any length of time, or if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that this is the number one talking point right now in this area. How do we fund infrastructure, specifically roads, but there's also other infrastructure such as clean water, such as sewer, et cetera, et cetera. And there's all sorts of discussions happening with related to this, happening that are related to this specific question, okay? And the discussions revolve around, obviously, with the state of South Carolina being a very red state, there is angst about raising taxes on anyone. And our current governor has been talking about trying to bring the income tax rate down to 0%, as other states have, basically no state income tax. And that is something that's a popular thing. People don't want to pay income tax. Economists think income tax is a bad idea. Right? You're disincentivizing people to make money. Taxes typically are used to disincentivize certain behaviors. We don't want to disincentivize people making money, and yet we do. Now, what happens when we have an environment like this where basically there's all of these pushes for lower taxes, lower taxes, lower taxes, but then you have this whole issue of, well, we have infrastructure concerns, things that need to be directly addressed on some way by our government. Then the question becomes, well, how do we pay for those things? And what a lot of people resort to is like, well, we just need to budget better. We just need to be more transparent. We just need to do this. We just need to do that. I'm just going to be very clear on a few things here. The budget, let's look at county council, for instance. The budget that county council publishes every year, very transparent, right? They have money allocated to all of these different services. You know, you've got the sheriff, you've got EMT, firefighters, schools, libraries, parks and rec, all these different things. Now, when people are suggesting that maybe some money has not transparently gone where it should go to, what they typically seem to imply is that county council itself is misappropriating money. And I'm going to stand here, because I do stand here in my office, standing desk. I'm going to stand here and tell you that that is a ludicrous assumption. And I'll tell you why. Do you think that law enforcement would be okay with not receiving their money that has been budgeted to them? Do you think that they would just sit by and be like, huh, well, we were scheduled to get however hundreds of millions and we only got 50 million. Well, we'll make it work. You think that they're not going to go to the press with that? Do you think EMTs are not going to go to the press? Do you think the libraries are not going to go to the press? Do you think that somehow county council is going to shaft all of these different organizations that are essential to our county? And that's not going to get out in the public, in the press? That's absurd. That's utterly absurd. So then the question is, okay, well, how are all of those organizations spending that money? And that's a legitimate concern, right? There could be waste, fraud, and abuse, which are the three words that people in 2026 love to use. There could be waste, fraud, and abuse on all of these different levels. Who's going to check that? Nobody is asking for an audit of the libraries to see how the libraries are doing, right? How they're appropriating their money. Nobody is asking for an audit of firefighters. Guess what? Some of these fire departments, the firehouses that they're putting up are like cathedrals. I mean, these things, I'm not trying to say that we need to audit them, okay? I'm not standing here saying that, but I mean, Nobody's asking that question as these what appear to be multi-million dollar fire departments go up all over the place. I mean, it's all over the place. They're some of the nicest buildings in Greenville County. And yet nobody is asking, well, where did they get that money? Was that the best use of that money? Do we really need them to be this nice? Maybe we do. I don't know. My only point in saying all of this is that there's so much focus on the fact that the county is needs to somehow rebudget and become more transparent in terms of how they spend money. But it's not, but people are focused on county council. And I've had a lot of critiques about county council on this show over the years. But you cannot look at that budget. Nobody looks at that budget and says, here's a line item that's inflated. You have to go to the organizations that are receiving that money, the institutions that are receiving that money. You have to audit each and every one of those. Well, that costs a ton of money as well. And again, nobody is, I'm not hearing anyone asking to do that. So I think most people don't think that, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse is occurring on those levels. And so I just want to make that point over and over again, because I keep hearing in terms of the tax discussion that we just need to eradicate waste, fraud, and abuse on the county level. But nobody seems to really understand what they need to do in order to do that. You have to audit every single institution and organization receiving money from the county. The county's already done their audit, okay? They've already had all sorts of looks, because we've got basically county council has completely turned over the past 6 years. I mean, it's a completely different makeup than it was when I first really started to get into politics 6 years ago. And so we need to have a serious look at this and look at the right sources, right? The right institutions, right organizations. Otherwise, we're not going to get to the bottom of it. And here's the thing, okay? Let's be real. If we actually... And I know I'm going on a rant here, and I'll dial it back in here in a second. I do have a few little notes that I'm working off of here, and I'll come back. But I need to get this off my chest. The reality of the situation is that if we audited all of those organizations, let's say that Greenville County Council decided that they're going to spend taxpayer money to probably several hundreds of thousands of dollars to audit every single receiver of county money, people wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't believe the results. Unless a result came up with, wow, we actually did find a tremendous amount of waste, fraud, and abuse. Like, unless that were found, people wouldn't believe it. If the conclusion was, actually, these funds are being appropriated pretty well, what people were just going to say is that was a fraudulent audit. And it just goes round and round, okay? And so I've been very transparent on this show. I am a libertarian. Small L libertarian. I'm not like a part of the Libertarian Party, but I generally speaking have libertarian leading beliefs for the most part. I'm not Ron Paul by any means, but I generally like the concept of liberty, freedom, low taxes, private property rights, all of those things. And the reality of the situation is that sometimes you do need more tax revenue in order to fund public projects. Now, if private organizations were willing to fix our roads, I would absolutely be on board with that. But it's not happening. Listen, we're well past the point where that could possibly happen. And this is where we start to get into the real estate discussion. Because what people really want is they want the developers to pay for all of this. And they want people moving to Greenville to pay for all of these infrastructure concerns. And so there's been all sorts of discussions for many, many years now on what are called impact fees. I'm going to explain impact fees real quick for you guys. Impact fees are a fee imposed on a developer on every lot that they intend to develop. And it can be assessed by a lot of different organizations. Okay, I'm not going to get into all of them, but the county is one of the organizations that can assess an impact fee. Well, Greenville County Council has been talking for years about impact fees and how impact fees are the way that we can fix the infrastructure in this area. So they hired an outside attorney consulting firm, rather, that has done studies on impact fees all over the country to look at the Greenville market and to see, hey, is this, can we avoid some sort of a of a tax increase on our people in general here in the Greenville area by assessing impact fees on developers. And the consultant, the firm concluded that no, it's not nearly enough. There's no point in even doing the impact fees unless you're bringing in revenue through something like a penny sales tax, okay? And so guess what has happened? The same people in county council that grandstanded against the penny sales tax, which is a very, very marginal and temporary and specifically earmarked for very specific projects increase on sales tax, okay? And it wouldn't go towards groceries or you know, other things that directly affect, you know, that harm people at the lowest income brackets. It's very targeted, very specific, very well done, and a huge percentage of it would have come from people visiting Greenville, not from residents. Greenville County, many people on Greenville County Council grandstanded against it a few years ago, and it failed. It passed in Spartanburg County. It failed in Greenville County. The very same people who grandstanded against it are now pushing for a penny sales tax. They finally came full circle and realized, oh, actually, what a lot of organizations, the realtors, ooh, the big bad realtors, right? Because that's what we're looked at right now. You look at, there are candidates right now that are saying the Realtor Political Action Committee didn't support me. Guess what? That's a good thing. It's a good thing that the realtors don't support me, because that means I'm anti-development and I'm anti-growth. When have you ever heard that being anti-growth is a good thing? But that's the sentiment right now in the Greenville area, because people associate growth with a bunch of New Yorkers and people from California and all over the place moving into the area, and they don't want that. We're closed, they say. We don't need any more people. And so, guess what? As realtors, you know, and again, I've been transparently a part of the Realtor Political Action Committee. Nothing that I say on this podcast is coming from them, okay? Nothing that I say is any sort of an endorsement from that committee or from the Greater Greenville Association of Realtors. I want to make that very, very clear. But that committee has been saying for years, we can't fund infrastructure with impact fees. We need something like a penny sales tax. Nobody wants that, but that's the only way to do it. You're not going to get it from taxing developers. And guess what? You don't tax the developers. Again, and this is where it comes full circle to real estate. That money gets tripled and passed on to the end buyer, and it makes housing less affordable overall. If we didn't have impact fees, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have impact fees. I'm just saying if we didn't have them, housing would be dramatically cheaper than it is right now. New construction right now is in the low 300s. It would be in the 200s. You could buy a brand new house for probably 275, like on average, if there were no impact fees in the system. And that's just reality. Now, again, I'm painting with very broad strokes, because there is a place, I believe, for these impact fees. But make no mistake, those are taxes, and they are specifically taxes on first-time homebuyers, okay? The people that need to be taxed the least right now, right? Those are the people that need money in their pockets. Those are the people that we're hurting when we do impact fees. Now, the other way that that our area has tried to figure out how to fund infrastructure has been, and I've already alluded to this, by simply stopping growth, stopping development, right? And I guess the theory here is if we have fewer people come to this area, then we'll basically have time to get caught up. There is no indication. There is no study. There is no data that indicates that if fewer people started moving to this area, that we would then have time to get caught up on our infrastructure. Much of the complaint about our infrastructure is regarding state roads. And the Department of Transportation, they have, what, an 8-year backlog? Like, what are we going to do about that? You think stopping growth is going to somehow get the DOT caught up? Like, that's just not going to happen. And this is why a lot of people were against this, but I was for when the previous penny sales tax was proposed. It proposed to take over, that the county would take over state roads. Do you think that I want my county tax dollars to be paying something that I'm already paying for the state? Do you think I want to pay for the roads to be repaired twice? No. But would I rather the roads be repaired than not be repaired? Which is what I think is going to happen if the DOT continues to operate the way it is. I would rather the roads be repaired. Now, this is where we get into the governor's race, right? We have a gubernatorial election this year. And pay very close attention to what they're saying about the DOT, because that is where a lot of these road issues come from. It is in Columbia. It is something that the governor can have influence over. But pay attention, because there's a lot of talk about the DOT with these gubernatorial candidates right now. And as I've already said, I think I started going down this road and then kind of got distracted. But the primaries, I believe it's June 9th. That's going to determine. Now, there's probably going to be a governor runoff. There's probably going to be a runoff in several elections. But whoever wins those primaries is likely going, the Republican primary is likely going to win the election. It's the odds of us having a Democrat governor in the state of South Carolina are so, so low. Okay, let's just be real. I'm not saying that you shouldn't vote Democrat if that's what your conscience tells you to do. I'm just saying that it's probably not a vote that's going to count outside of being a protest vote, okay? And so the primaries are super important, okay? You need to be locked in right now to what these candidates are saying. Don't wait until November. It's too late in November. November, it's already decided for many of these races. And you also need to hear what they're saying about growth. Right? If they're anti-growth, that's a concern to me. I want our area to continue to grow. All of the things that people love about Greenville are the result of growth. Like Falls Park has been there for, you know, 20 something years. Falls Park like doesn't ever exist unless we have a pro-growth mindset. And as it is, many people were against it when it came out, which is absurd. You think about this, how absurd it would be to be against Falls Park in 2026. But people 25 years ago were against it, or however, whenever it was that the plans were produced by Greenville City. They were against it. They thought it was absurd. They thought we were getting rid of a good overpass bridge just to show some water. Why would we do that? They couldn't see the vision. They had such a short mindset and they were anti-growth. And it's the same thing that we have today with so many of these people. And so now you hear Greenville County talking about they want to look into concurrency. The way I understand concurrency is it's basically saying it's basically a moratorium on development. Or it can be a moratorium on development on the basis of we can't provide the capacity for our infrastructure. So for instance, clean water, okay? Let's say that it was concluded that we didn't have the ability to provide enough clean water for additional development. There could be a moratorium placed on all future development until the clean water infrastructure was built out better, so that we could actually then support that additional infrastructure. That's what concurrency in this very specific context means. Well, Greenville County is studying concurrency, okay? That's a nice way of saying they're trying to figure out how to stop development because they're running out of ideas. They're running out of ideas. Now they're proposing a tax that they all went against. Many of them were elected into office specifically because they were against the tax. And guess what? I've interviewed and spoken to many of the people running for county council, and they were all against the penny sales tax. Now, I haven't gone back to look to see if they changed their position since county council has brought this up, has brought it back up. But the only one that I spoke to that was in favor of it was the one that I interviewed on the show, Daniel Rumfelt. He said that that was something that, in his opinion, we should have done. Now, he didn't say it on this show, but I've talked to him outside of the show, and he did bring that up. He's the only person I'm going to name because he's the only person that's been on my show, okay? I'm just going to be honest about that. And he asked to be on this show, okay, as well. That's one of my rules when I have people running for office that haven't currently been in political office. They have to reach out to me first. I'm not reaching out to all these different people and asking them to be on my show. I'd be at risk of trying to pick winners and losers. But if they reach out to me, I absolutely give them the opportunity to come on and state their case, whatever that may be. But this is the reality of the situation, is that a lot of the people that are currently running are running on a no tax platform. And when you ask them, well, what are we going to do about roads and infrastructure? They say, we got to get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. Okay. Just like the current county council has done the past several years, what are you going to do that they haven't done? Give us one proposal for what you are going to do that they haven't done. They can't give it. They can't do it. They simply have this idea in their head. And be very careful when you're speaking to these people. Be very careful about these people that make these claims with no data. I'm a data junkie personally. If you know me, you already know that. It's very alarming to me when people make these grand statements and there's absolutely no evidence backing what they're saying. That's my rant on roads, infrastructure, and how that relates to the county. All right, these next few ones I'm going to go by a little bit quicker because they're not quite as they're not as big of a part of the overall discussion as the road and infrastructure discussion. Short-term rentals, Airbnb, Vrbo, or VRBO, whatever. They're going to be taxed countywide. They're currently taxed in cities, various cities. The writing is on the wall. Listen, County Council, Greenville County Council is investigating taxing Airbnbs, whether through the Airbnb website or in other ways. It's going to happen. So if you own an Airbnb, you own a short-term rental, just start preparing for that. I don't see that train stopping. I would tell you to reach out to your county council person and say, I'm against this. I just think at this point, it's probably a waste of time. They are looking for ways to increase taxes in a way that is popular. Okay. Well, what's a popular thing? You know, a lot of people don't like Airbnbs. Yeah. If you're one of those that's like, wait, what do you mean by that? People in neighborhoods, they don't want Airbnbs to be in their neighborhood. And I kind of understand that to a certain extent. But there are way worse things that can be in a neighborhood than an Airbnb. But whatever, I digress. People like the idea of those that have these rental properties. They, in people's minds, these people that own these Airbnbs have so much money that why wouldn't they want to be taxed? And you know what? There is an element of maybe taxing some of these Airbnbs is actually necessary in order to maybe dilute or not dilute, but in order to undilute the Airbnb market. Get rid of some of these that shouldn't be there to begin with, right? A bunch of people bought properties that they converted to Airbnbs back when mortgage rates were low. Maybe a tax increase will push some of those to sell and bring more inventory to the market. I don't know. I'm kind of grasping for straws here because I own a short-term rental and I don't want it to be taxed. I intentionally avoided city limits. I intentionally avoided HOAs so that I could use my property how I wanted to. I don't want my property to be taxed. It's already taxed. Here's the thing, okay? I'm acting like Airbnbs aren't taxed. They're already taxed at the non-owner occupied tax rate or the commercial property tax rate, which is 3 to 3.5, sometimes even 4 times what the property tax rate is for an owner occupied property. That's a problem. And that's another thing that's being discussed very, very heavily on the governor level right now is the property tax structure. What should we do about that? Should we make it a more equitable structure? Because right now, with rental properties being taxed as commercial properties, guess who gets hit the hardest by that? It's the renters. Guess who has the least amount of money? It's the renters. Guess who's getting the most amount of tax breaks? The owner-occupied properties, the owner-occupants who have more money than the renters to begin with. People think that the landlords and the landladies are the ones shouldering that property tax burden. No, they pass that on. That gets passed on to the end user. And if it doesn't, the property gets sold. It's that simple. So the short-term rentals are already being taxed at the commercial property tax rate. We're talking about an additional accommodation style tax, like what the hotels pay. That's what we're talking about here. And I'm against that, but I've resigned myself to it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if. And so, again, if you've got short-term rentals, be prepared for that. You might want to start looking to sell now. You might sell now as a short-term rental that's cash flowing, whereas it might not cash flow near as well after getting taxed. Now might be the time to exit and to try to pass it on to someone that doesn't know what's coming down, what's coming down from the county level. And trust me, once Greenville County does it, all the surrounding counties are going to do it. This is going to be the entire upstate and eventually the entire state of South Carolina. Okay, this is where this is going. It's lousy for those of us that have had these properties. I mean, my property has been an Airbnb for 7 years. Why tax it now? But this is the spirit of our day. And it's, like I said, it is going to happen. Another thing you need to be considering as you're deciding who to vote for is it got passed this year in the state of South Carolina that property taxes for seniors would be lowered substantially. Okay? If you're 65 and older, you already qualify. Now you do have to apply for it, but for what's called homestead exemption. If that's confusing, if you think, why do you have to be 65 or older for homestead exemption? You just said that owner occupants pay a much lower tax rate. Well, that's not actually called homestead. Homestead is an additional overlay on top of the tax break that you get as an owner occupant. And it basically reduces the assessed value of your property. So if your property is deemed by the county to be worth $300,000, if you're a senior up until 2026, that would be reduced by $50,000. So you'd be taxed off a $250,000 valuation. Well, now they've increased it, and it depends on how long you've lived in the state, but up to a $150,000 deduction. So that $300,000 valuation now reduced to $150,000. If you're a senior 65 and older that's lived, I believe, 10 years or more in the state. It might be 5 years or more. I need to go back and look at that. But regardless, they really, really did seniors a solid here. Seniors who, by and large, in the state, don't need those tax breaks. But seniors vote. And seniors get what seniors want. And they want lower taxes. They get what they want. You know who doesn't get it? The first-time home buyers, the ones that are kind of flaky voters because they're in their 20s and 30s, the ones who need these tax breaks the most, they don't get the tax breaks because they're not considered to be the ones most likely to go out and vote. That's why it's so important that people vote. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter what you vote for or who you vote for. But if you want your voice to be heard, if you want the issues of your generation and your demographic to be heard, your demographic has to vote. That's the way this works. And so, me personally, I'm not against lowering the property taxes for seniors. I know a lot of seniors on fixed incomes that is going to help out tremendously. There's a lot of seniors in some depressed areas of Greenville County. They've lived in a home for 50 years. It's really not in great shape. And they are self-insured. They don't have a mortgage on it. But they're having to pay these property taxes, and it's hard for them. Okay. This really helps them. Do we need to do that for seniors living in million-dollar properties? Like, do they really need this sort of a tax break? I wish that there had been more nuance when it came to this. And I think that you should consider that as you're voting. What did your representative, if your representative is, or your senator is up for election this year, what was their stance on it? How did they approach it? Are they concerned about first-time home buyers and their inability to purchase a property and pursue the American dream? That's an important part of this discussion. And that leads into my final point here, which is housing affordability. And this has been, for me personally, the most discouraging part of all of this. And that is that as I've talked to people running for office, housing affordability is not on the ballot this year. It's not. Nobody is worried about it. Nobody is concerned about ballooning housing costs. Nobody is worried about the fact that now the first time, average first time home buyer is, depending on what you look at, either high 30s, maybe even early 40s. Like, the average age of a first time home buyer is higher than it's ever been, at least as far back as we have data. And nobody seems to be concerned about that. How are our children going to be able to afford a home if we don't do something about it? And the thing to do about it isn't stimulus, okay? I'm not advocating for that. But we need to really, really think about how these policies, like I already mentioned, impact fees directly affect housing affordability. And they're never brought up in that context. You hear people on county council talk about it. They're not concerned about housing affordability. They don't care what the average age of a first-time home buyer is. They could care less. I should say they couldn't care less. I know either one works, but they couldn't care less. They care not at all. You hear some of these people in the state house, some of our state senators, they don't care. Very few of them are actually concerned about these sorts of things. In fact, everything that they're doing is in the opposite direction. Okay? We just had a local bill that almost got passed in the state. Okay? It was something I've never seen in my life before, but it was functionally. So in case you don't know, zoning happens on a county level, as it should. We don't want bureaucrats in Columbia deciding how land in Greenville should be used and should be zoned. Well, guess what? There were a couple of people in Columbia, in our government, who decided that they needed to pass a local bill for an area of the upstate that they called the Blue Ridge area, okay? Northern Greenville County. And it basically would have functionally zoned the area to not allow developments. It was something like they're under 5 acres. They would not have allowed you to put more than one house per 5 acres. It was something to that effect. That's absurd. That is absolutely absurd. Not only is it unconstitutional, our state doesn't allow you to zone local areas like that. We have a constitution for a reason. It's remarkable that people in the Freedom Caucus and in the Republican Party, who claim to be all about the Constitution, didn't seem to care too much about the Constitution, the South Carolina Constitution in this instance. Nonetheless, people are really pushing for this to happen. And when you do something like that, when you start saying there needs to be, you know, to build a house, you have to have minimum acreage, and then you can't do, you know, developments unless those developments have tons of acreage per property, which then that's functionally a moratorium. That's all that is. That is a moratorium because developers can't build communities with multiple acre lots and actually make money in this economy. It's the reality of the situation. That all transpired just within the past few months in an election year. That's how little they care about housing affordability. They're willing to try to ram something like this through Columbia. And I was told that the governor would have vetoed it. And good on him if that's true. I don't think we could get any of our current governors, people running for governor, to make a comment on that. I would love to know if they would have vetoed that. But nonetheless, we have a serious problem on our hands here in that housing affordability is so little regarded that people in Colombia in an election year are willing to try to ram something like that through. And they were sneaky with it too. I could get into a lot of details on how sneaky they were. I'm not going to go into all of that. There are some things I know in confidence that I'm not going to share on here because I do have political ties. But just know that it's nasty and it's not getting better unless we get people, unless people in the you know, Gen Z and millennials, and you know, not too long, Gen Alpha as well, start telling people in government that housing affordability is a problem. I don't want my kids living with me forever. But I'm looking at the possibility they might have to live with me for a long time after they turn 18. I moved out, like officially moved out when I was 22. Although really, it was closer to 21 because after the age of 21, I stayed in Greenville. I was in college, obviously, but I stayed in Greenville that summer. And then I was officially out of my household by the age of 22. I was privileged to be able to do that. Now, I wasn't a homeowner for a few more years. But the current generation that is growing up, they're not going to have that ability. And a lot of it is because of the housing affordability crisis that we have in our area and that I've talked about a lot on the show. And we need more politicians willing to stand up and say, this is a crisis. This is just as important as the roads and the infrastructure concerns that we have. This is just as important as keeping taxes low, making sure that people can buy a home and can experience the American dream for themselves. That's important. That should be on the ballot. But it's not on the ballot this year, and that is a shame. And I recommend that you talk to, if you have someone to vote for this year, that you talk to them about the housing affordability issue and be like, hey, are you concerned about this at all? Are you concerned about the fact that the first-time homebuyer isn't like their late 30s now? Like, is that crossing your mind as like a problem? Until that like really starts to hit the pocketbooks of people in Colombia, maybe once they're, you know, we've got, you know, a big divide between there's a lot of baby boomers in Colombia and then there's a lot of millennials. Okay. There's only a handful of Gen X in Colombia, my understanding. And there's a big divide. The baby boomers, they don't care about housing affordability at all. They've had a house since, you know, for 50 or 60 years at this point. They bought it for $25,000, you know, whatever. You guys see the memes, you hear all these things. I'm not here to trash baby boomers by any stretch. Okay, that's not my point. They have their own mindset because they have a different perspective. Millennials, we were probably the last generation to be able to afford a home in our 20s and 30s. Easily afford a home, I shouldn't say easily, but relatively easily afford a home in our 20s and 30s. Not all millennials, but at least in this area, that was feasible. That was possible. But what hasn't hit us yet is how long it's going to be for our children. And that's what I keep realizing as I have these conversations is that people in, you know, I'm 40 years old. People my age, for the most part, have younger kids. And so they're years away from being faced with the reality of, oh, wow, my 18-year-old is not going to be able to afford a home for a very long time. Or my 22-year-old graduated college. And, I mean, the incomes are not congruent with home prices. They're going to have to live with me for a long time. You know, like, it just hasn't hit our pocketbooks yet. When it does, then it'll be the crisis, right? Then that'll be the thing that people are talking about. I want people talking about it now so that we're not reacting, so that we're being proactive. That's what needs to happen. So there's a lot of real estate on the ballot this year. Housing affordability is not one of them, but a lot of other things are. And I hope you guys try to avail yourself to as much information as possible. But most importantly, please get out and vote in the primaries. Do not miss out on the primaries, because those are the most important, like for these elections, that's the most important part of it. It's more important than the election in November in terms of our local and state races. Most of those are going to be decided this month. or in whenever a runoff happens. That's all I have to say for you guys today. Hopefully not too political, but hopefully interesting at the same time. I feel like this is an important exercise for us to go through. Again, because I'm talking to a lot of people, boots on the ground here. I know what's going on. And I feel like it's important for you guys to know as well. I get a lot of positive feedback from people about these shows when I talk about politics, because a lot of this stuff is not covered by our local media. So thank you so much for watching or listening. I would just ask that you like, rate, review, subscribe to the show. Make sure you support it that way. And if you need a realtor in this area, one that's plugged in, one that knows what's happening on the ground here in our local government and elsewhere, please check out the contact information in the show notes. Thank you guys so much for watching and listening, and we will talk again next time.